After the Storm. It wasn't about anything, something about making punch. And then we started fighting, and I slipped, and he had me down, kneeling on my chest and choking me with both hands like he was trying to kill me. And all the time I was trying to get the knife out of my pocket to cut him loose. Everybody was too drunk to pull him off me. He was choking me and hammering my head on the floor, and I got the knife out and opened it up, and I cut the muscle right across his arm, and he let go of me. He couldn't have held on if he wanted to. Then he rolled and hung onto that arm and started to cry, and I said, "What the hell you want to choke me for?" I'd have killed him. I couldn't swallow for a week. He hurt my throat bad. Well, I went out of there, and there were plenty of them with him, and some came out after me, and I made a turn and was down by the docks, and I met a fellow, and he said somebody killed a man up the street. I said, "Who killed him?" And he said, "I don't know who killed him, but he's dead all right." And it was dark, and there was water standing in the street, and no lights, and windows broke, and boats all up in the town, and trees blown down, and everything all blown. And I got a skiff and went out and found my boat where I had her inside of Mango Key, and she was all right, only she was full of water. So I bailed her out and pumped her out, and there was a moon, but plenty of clouds and still plenty rough, and I took it down along. And when it was daylight, I was off Eastern Harbor. Brother, that was some storm. I was the first boat out, and you never saw water like that was. It was just as white as a lye barrel, and coming from Eastern Harbor to Southwest Key, you couldn't recognize the shore. It was a big channel blown right out through the middle of the beach, trees and all blown out, and a channel cut through, and all the water white as chalk, and everything on it, branches and whole trees and dead birds and all floating. Inside the keys were all the pelicans in the world, and all kinds of birds flying. They must have gone inside there when they knew it was coming. I lay at Southwest Key a day, and nobody came after me. I was the first boat out, and I seen a spar floating, and I knew there must be a wreck, and I started out to look for her. I found her. She was a three-masted schooner, and I could just see the stumps of her spars out of water. She was in too deep water, and I didn't get anything off of her, so I went on looking for something else. I had the start on all of them, and I knew I ought to get whatever there was. I went on down over the sandbars from where I left that three-masted schooner, and I didn't find anything, and I went on a long way. I was way out toward the quicksands, and I didn't find anything, so I went on. Then, when I was in sight of the Rebecca Light, I saw all kinds of birds making over something, and I headed over for them to see what it was, and there was a cloud of birds, all right. I could see something look like a spar up out of the water. And when I got over close, the birds all went up in the air and stayed all around me. The water was clear out there, and there was a spar of some kind sticking out just above the water, and when I come up close to it, I saw it was all dark underwater, like a long shadow. And I came right over it, and there underwater was a liner, just lying there all underwater, as big as the whole world. I drifted over her in the boat. She lay on her side, and the stern was deep down. The portholes were all shut tight, and I could see the glass shine in the water in the hole of her, the biggest boat I ever saw in my life laying there. And I went along the whole length of her, and then I went over and anchored, and I had the skiff on the deck forward, and I shoved it down into the water and sculled over with the birds all around me. I had a water glass like we use sponging, and my hand shook so I could hardly hold it. All the portholes were shut that you could see going along over her, but way down below near the bottom something must have been open because there were pieces of things floating out all the time. You couldn't tell what they were, just pieces. That's what the birds were after. You never saw so many birds. They were all around me, crazy, yelling. I could see everything sharp and clear. I could see her rounded over, and she looked a mile long under the water. She was lying on a clear white bank of sand, and the spar was a sort of foremast or some sort of tackle that slanted out of water the way she was lying on her side. Her bow wasn't very far under. I could stand on the letters of her name on her bow, and my head was just out of water. But the nearest porthole was 12 feet down. I could just reach it with a grains pole, and I tried to break it with that, but I couldn't. The glass was too stout. So I sculled back to the boat and got a wrench and lashed it to the end of the grains pole, and I couldn't break it. There I was, looking down through the glass at that liner with everything in her. And I was the first one to her, and I couldn't get into her. She must have had $5 million worth in her. It made me shaky to think how much she must have in her. Inside the porthole that was closest, I could see something, but I couldn't make it out through the water glass. I couldn't do any good with the grains pole, and I took off my clothes and stood and took a couple of deep breaths and dove over off the stern with the wrench in my hand and swam down. I could hold on for a second to the edge of the porthole, and I could see in, and there was a woman inside with her hair floating all out. I could see her floating plain, and I hit the glass twice with the wrench hard, and I heard the noise clink in my ears, but it wouldn't break, and I had to come up. I hung on to the dinghy and got my breath, and then I climbed in and took a couple of breaths and dove again. I swam down and took hold of the edge of the porthole with my fingers and held it and hit the glass as hard as I could with the wrench. I could see the woman floated in the water through the glass. Her hair was tied once close to her head, and it floated all out in the water. I could see the rings on one of her hands. She was right up close to the porthole, and I hit the glass twice, and I didn't even crack it. When I came up, I thought I wouldn't make it to the top before I'd have to breathe. I went down once more, and I cracked the glass, only cracked it. And when I came up, my nose was bleeding, and I stood on the bow of the liner with my bare feet on the letters of her name and my head just out and rested there. And then I swam over to the skiff and pulled up into it and sat there waiting for my head to stop aching and looking down into the water glass. But I bled so I had to wash out the water glass. Then I lay back in the skiff and held my hand under my nose to stop it. And I lay there with my head back looking up, and there was a million birds above and all around. When I quit bleeding, I took another long look through the glass, and then I sculled over to the boat to try and find something heavier than the wrench, but I couldn't find a thing, not even a sponge hook. I went back, and the water was clearer all the time, and you could see everything that floated out over that white bank of sand. I looked for sharks, but there weren't any. You could have seen a shark a long way away. The water was so clear and the sand white. There was a grapple for an anchor on the skiff, and I cut it off and went overboard and down with it. It carried me right down and past the porthole, and I grabbed and couldn't hold anything, and I went on down and down, sliding along the curved side of her. I had to let go of the grapple. I heard it bump once, and it seemed like a year before I came up through to the top of the water. The skiff was floated away with the tide, and I swam over to her with my nose bleeding in the water while I swam, and I was plenty glad there weren't sharks, but I was tired. My head felt cracked open, and I lay in the skiff and rested, and then I sculled back. It was getting along in the afternoon. I went down once more with the wrench, and it didn't do any good. That wrench was too light. It wasn't any good diving unless you had a big hammer or something heavy enough to do good. Then I lashed the wrench to the grains pole again, and I watched through the water glass and pounded on the glass and hammered until the wrench came off and I saw it in the glass, clear and sharp, go sliding down along her, and then off and down to the quicksand and go in. Then I couldn't do a thing. The wrench was gone and I'd lost the grapple, so I sculled back to the boat. I was too tired to get the skiff aboard, and the sun was pretty low. The birds were all pulling out and leaving her, and I headed for Sou'west Key, towing the skiff and the birds going on ahead of me and behind me. I was plenty tired. That night it came on to blow, and it blew for a week. You couldn't get out to her. They came out from town and told me the fellow I'd had to cut was all right except for his arm, and I went back to town and they put me under $500 bond. It came out all right because some of them, friends of mine, swore he was after me with an axe. But by the time we got back out to her, the Greeks had blown her open and cleaned her out. They got the safe out with dynamite. Nobody ever knows how much they got. She carried gold, and they got it all. They stripped her clean. I found her, and I never got a nickel out of her. It was a hell of a thing, all right. They say she was just outside of Havana Harbor when the hurricane hit, and she couldn't get in, or the owners wouldn't let the captain chance coming in. They say he wanted to try, so she had to go with it, and in the dark they were running with it trying to go through the gulf between Rebecca and Tortugas when she struck on the quicksands. Maybe her rudder was carried away. Maybe they weren't even steering. But anyway, they couldn't have known they were quicksands, and when she struck, the captain must have ordered them to open up the ballast tank so she'd lay solid. But it was quicksand she'd hit, and when they opened the tank, she went in stern first and then over on her beam ends. There were 450 passengers and the crew on board of her, and they must have all been aboard of her when I found her. They must have opened the tanks as soon as she struck, and the minute she settled on it, the quicksands took her down. Then her boilers must have burst, and that must have been what made those pieces that came out. It was funny there weren't any sharks, though. There wasn't a fish. I could have seen them on that clear white sand. Plenty of fish now, though. Jewfish, the biggest kind. The biggest part of her is under the sand now, but they live inside of her, the biggest kind of jewfish. Some weigh 300 to 400 pounds. Sometime we'll go out and get some. You can see the Rebecca Light from where she is. They've got a buoy on her now. She's right at the end of the quicksand, right at the edge of the gulf. She only missed going through by about 100 yards. In the dark, in the storm, they just missed it. Raining the way it was, they couldn't have seen the Rebecca. They're not used to that sort of thing. The captain of a liner isn't used to scudding that way. They have a course, and they tell me they set some sort of a compass, and it steers itself. They probably didn't know where they were when they ran with that blow, but they came close to making it. Maybe they'd lost the rudder, though. Anyway, there wasn't another thing for them to hit till they'd get to Mexico once they were in that gulf. Must have been something, though, when they struck in that rain and wind and he told them to open their tanks. Nobody could have been on deck in that blowing rain. Everybody must have been below. They couldn't have lived on deck. There must have been some scenes inside, all right, because you know she's settled fast. I saw the wretch go into the sand. The captain couldn't have known it was quicksand when she struck, unless he knew these waters. He just knew it wasn't rock. He must have seen it all up in the bridge. He must have known what it was about when she settled. I wonder how fast she made it. I wondered if the mate was there with him. Do you think they stayed inside the bridge, or do you think they took it outside? They never found any bodies, not a one. Nobody floating. They float a long way with the lifebelts, too. They must have took it inside. Well, the Greeks got it all. Everything. They must have come fast, all right. They picked her clean. First there was the birds, then me, then the Greeks, and even the birds got more out of her than I did.